Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Born Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Sun's shining here. I'm looking at a church. The kettle's on the boil. Everything's very British.
I feel quintessentially
English. It's something else. I've just made a scone for breakfast, and I'm having a cup of. I'm not having a cup of tea, but the kettle is on the boil. The kettle's on the roll.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I am staring at a cocktail I've just created. It's part vodka, part mango juice, part lemon juice,
wow,
and part something else. I can't remember what else I put in it, but it tastes. Yeah, it's all right. It's quite acidic. It's actually burning my insides, but maybe it could be a good substitute for coffee. Given that you always complain that I drink too much coffee in these shows, so I thought I'd substitute it with something else.
I will not be held responsible or held liable for you turning into a raging Tuesday alcoholic. It's not right. To be slamming, mind you, what time is it where you are? About 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock?
It's 5 o'clock. That's fine.
It's 5 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, isn't it? Yeah. So
perfect time for a mango vodka cocktail, whatever that's called. I don't know if that's actually got a name. I'll call it the Natsuki.
It sounds like a one you'd get in like the late '90s, early noughties. You used to have stuff like Reef or like a vodka Metz or a I'm trying to think now, like a. They did a lot of different vodka flavors. Because you remember the Vodka Revolution opened back then? It was like a Russian kind of communist themed bar, around the whole of England and I think Scotland as well. They may have been in other places as well. There's certainly still one in Wales, I believe, in Cardiff. And they would have 100 different vodka flavored vodkas. And so you'd have 100 different flavored vodkas.
Oh, wow.
But within about 3 weeks, they'd run out of the delicious ones, and you were left with the chili flavors and the silly flavors, the licorice flavors that nobody wanted to drink.
Ugh, that's not good. I mean, now we've got the gin revolution, right? Whenever I return to the UK, it's just gin everywhere.
Just more gin,
That hasn't come to Japan. So if you want a gin Japan, it's only like Bombay Sapphire, and that's the only one to go with. I don't know if gin craze is just the UK, to be honest, or if it's made its way over to North America. If you're a North American listener in, let us know. Do you drink gin? Do you like gin? I think Ryan Reynolds has his own gin at the moment as well.
Hasn't he? Yeah. Yeah, he has. He's one of the few. I think it's like, it always strikes me as being a little bit too artisanal, a little bit. It's men dressed like members of Mumford and Sons, the old waistcoats and braces and stuff like that, going like making this artisanal gin that is frequently undrinkable. I don't know what happened, but people used to brew booze at home. It used to be occasionally illegal, and it used to be just your dad with like a homebrew kit. Nowadays, everyone's at it. My mate Rin, he's never seen. If you went into his bag, if you saw him in the street at any point during the day or the night, and went in his bag, you'd find some hops. You'd find some kind of way of brewing beer. That's That's just the way it is. He's always got hops on him. He's always got the capacity to brew beer. I just can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on with the youth. And it's mainly the male youth. Let's make this very clear. Women have got better things to do.
Feel left out.
Get yourself some hops.
Going back to Ryan Reynolds, I think Hugh Jackman's got his own alcoholic brand. I mean, a lot of celebrities have been diving into the alcohol game at the moment because with so much variety of spirits, right, it's quite hard to market them to stand out. So they get a partnership, they have a celebrity buy a stake in the company, and then you've got like a strong marketing kind of ploy there. You've got a kind of strong relationship there to market it. So
yeah,
feel like I should be getting a piece of the action, a Braun Japan suck here, Braun Japan mango vodka range. What do you reckon? Could it work?
Yeah, it has to be quintessentially Japanese, though. So I'm thinking Chris Broad pre-mixed red eye, like a Clamato kind of situation.
Don't you
dare. Because it's red like the Braun Japan logo. It works. It's red like the Braun Japan logo. People will love it. I'm sure some small run kind of brewer will be listening who will be able to make a lager, pilsner, tomato juice mix. I'd buy that with a little bit of spice in there. Bang up for doing an advert for that. I might even switch allegiances from Coolish, who have just released yet another seasonal variation to their bloody product line, God. And they are very much not receptive to any of my emails or tweets.
Still, what's the new Coolish flavour?
Oh, I don't know. It's pink.
Pink.
It's just pink
flavour.
Somebody sent me on Twitter yesterday. I'll have to have a look. It's pink.
Wonderful. Well, yeah. If you're listening, ladies and gentlemen, give us some ideas. What should we do for the Braun Japan sake range? Out this Christmas. Fun for all the family. We'll have the Natsuki flavour, the risotto flavour, the peat flavour. Each flavour chosen, selected by each and every member of the Braun Japan cast. It's been a busy week for me, though. Alcohol aside... Yeah. I had a video come out about why I hate Japanese television. I think it was called Why I Don't Watch Japanese Television. Hate's a strong word, and I don't want to polarise too much opinion. But did you see, I'm pretty proud of this, the opening 40 seconds, it's the only bit of the video that's good, nah, it's all right, is me just basically used the diorama and blue screened my way in to make it look like I'm there. Did you feel I'd pulled it off, Pete? Have you even watched it?
Hey.
Are you my friend?
Hey, look. Look, I cannot get enough of miniaturized representations of buildings, something that's very popular in Japan. If you go to Tokyo Hands, you'll buy like little kind of kits of like little houses and little shops and little stores and stuff like that. It's wonderful. And I love what you've built. And I love there's a working television. But more importantly, I love that you've managed to green screen yourself into a scene. I've tried to green screen myself quite a lot. I'm no professional myself. I barely have access to green screens, but on the rare occasion I do, it's actually quite exciting. But I always get the lighting wrong. The shadows are always in the way. My key lighting in After Effects is always really rudimentary and it looks terrible. So you've done a lovely job. If you do look a bit big for the house,
what?
You're not that big, Chris, I'm afraid. I think you've overestimated how large you are.
It's tricky because I'm not sure the proportions in the miniature house are all to scale. It's like the table's a bit too big and whatnot. But I was happy with it. And I've got the crisps as well on the table, which makes it believable. I sent it to a few friends to test it first to see what they thought. And a few of them came back saying they didn't realise it was miniature. They thought I was on some sort of weird, trippy
like a set.
Yeah. So I was quite happy with that until I get flicked off screen.
That should be your next kind of task to get on Japanese dramatic television, like an old kind of Edo era kind of like samurai. Would Edo be, when's Edo? I can't remember. But like a samurai Edo, sort of drama that you see.
Edo's 1600s to the mid 1800s.
Because they seem to be the only kind of dramatic. It's either that or like a police procedural that the Japanese seem to really like. So if you could get onto any of those sets and get a cameo on any of those shows, that's very much what I would like to see.
I'm not sure I share your vision. Actually, where I used to live in Yamagata, there was a samurai town that they used as a like a set location for various films and TV. I always thought it was very rubbish though. It didn't look that good though. It looked like not much effort gone into it. Hopefully they're not listening because I don't want to slag off their wonderful samurai village.
Don't have to now. They just blue screen everything out, don't they? They blue screen just the end. Like there was some beautiful shots of the film What's it called? That Korean film that came out earlier this year and won an Oscar.
Parasite.
Parasite. Somebody showed like the visual effects. And like, I'm always sort of surprised about like how minimalist the visual effects can be, where they'll just, like, I think there's a shot where the boy's coming up through the undergrowth towards the house that where everything kind of happens. And they've just sort of blue screened out the top of the house to make the house look bigger so they could add like another level of the house on top, because the house isn't as tall as it is. And it's just like, I mean, you could have just built the bit of, I mean, it's just a bit of wood, isn't it? Just built the top of the house on it. Oy, oy, oy. I just, like, the most easy shots you'd think is really, really easy. They're always blue screening and kind of like doing little visual effects, little tweaks. So what you're seeing is always, you know, either filmed on a soundstage or filmed in a street where there's only like three or four people and they just add people in the background. It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
It's all about control. As a director, you know, you want complete control of the set and the background, and you can do things afterwards with it. Like, I was watching the behind the scenes for the Joker movie, and like parts of the skyline have been blue screened in the background in between buildings to make the city look more oppressive and kind of over, like, tower over the character, over the Joker. So yeah, it's more about creative direction than anything. I haven't seen Japanese TV shows or movies employ that many visual effects. Seem to be really bad at it. Japanese films don't seem to have the budget for special effects, and they always look a bit rubbish, apart from Shin Godzilla, which actually wasn't too bad. But I'd say the only thing about my video last week, because I did speak ill of Japanese TV in general and many shows, probably blown my chances of going back on.
Yeah.
That's it.
You've absolutely muffed it, to be honest. Though you may get a sponsorship for that horrible powdered egg crisp you were eating last week on the podcast.
Well, I mean, even the powdered egg product, it's salted egg flavoured potatoes.
Salted egg,
chips,
yeah.
Crisps. And they were in the start of the video as well on the table. I didn't do them a flattering review either, because they just taste awful. It tastes like someone's opened a bag of sugar and tipped it over some crisps instead of actually flavouring them.
Absolutely rank looking.
But there you go. I don't mind. I don't want to go back on Japanese TV anyway. It's not what people would have you believe. And if you haven't seen it yet, ladies and gentlemen, do check it out on the Born Japan channel. I'm quite proud of that one. I think it's going to be a good one.
Do it.
On to the news, though. It's been a weird week for news. I heard of this is a topic close to your heart, Pete. I know how much you love monkeys. This week, 70 Japanese macaque monkeys escaped from a zoo in Chiba. Basically, a construction worker spotted a hole in a fence that looked man-made. It looked like somebody had cut their way in. And it was only 38 centimetres high, 30 centimetres wide. But through that little hole, 70 monkeys have escaped into the local area. Luckily, there's been no reports of damage caused by the monkeys yet. But they're out there, Pete. They're waiting for you to come and catch them all.
That's Pokemon-esque, isn't it? It's got to catch the monkeys. It's like a video game. Yeah, wonderful. I mean, I like to think they've just gone straight to Narita Airport and just, you know, boarded a plane, boarded a cargo plane.
Well, I mean, you have a special bond with monkeys, don't you? You worked with monkeys in a zoo in London, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I've said before, I was there to make a CD-ROM. I didn't make the CD-ROM, just spent a lot of time looking at monkeys and bonobos and mainly gibbons. I'm a big gibbon fan. Show me a monkey, I'm like Drake going, I'm not interested. But show me a gibbon, I'm like, I'm Drake going, yes, I like gibbons.
I don't know why the word gibbon always triggers me. Something about the word gibbon.
It's just no one talks about them. Like, the gibbons were like, in certainly in the UK, I think were... No, they were. They kind of treated as kind of like a comedic animal, and they are a comedic animal. But I just don't think they're an ape. Right? You know, they're one of the apes, but nobody studies them because they're not as interesting as gorillas or chimps or bonobos, and orangutans and stuff. So yeah, it's really upsetting that gibbons aren't given the respect just because they're lesser apes. They're not lesser apes in my heart. They're wonderful, and sometimes they walk by people. It's really funny.
A monkey expert. What would you do? How would you get the for the authorities in Chiba, who are definitely listening in to this podcast, looking for some important key advice? What would you say to get those monkeys back, to return the 70 macaque monkeys to the zoo in Chiba?
Well, look, there's no monkey sanctuary or zoo in the world that hasn't lost a monkey in its time. It happens all of the time. You think these sort of animals like just you know stay where they're supposed to be in their paddocks or whatever. As soon as they see a glimmer of light, they're out. Certainly in Twycross Zoo, where I used to work in sort of Coventry, sort of Warwickshire way, the chimpanzees would occasionally escape, and they wouldn't really do much apart from jump on top of their own cage and just sort of laugh at the keepers, sort of going, ha ha, I've escaped, but I still very much would like to be fed. So it's very much food-based. If you can feed those monkeys, all the better. Set up. They'll be back. They know where they live. And the thing about, I think people have got a sort of weird relationship with zoos. And obviously at some zoos, a lot of zoos aren't great. The finances aren't there and the will isn't there to keep the animals in the way that they're supposed to. But fundamentally, animals only move homes due to exhausting food sources or predators. So I'm not completely anti-zoo because I know a lot of zoos do some incredible conservation work. But there's still obviously a kind of performative element to it, which I think zoos would be well served to remove from their thing, because obviously people are a little bit more conscious about that. But some governments can't be trusted in many ways to keep their animals alive, because they just log the fuck out of the Amazon, for example. They log the fuck out of where these animals live. So I am kind of like caught between zoos do some good work and also zoos are bad. What was the question again? Do I like zoos? I can't remember. The animals only move on because they've exhausted their food or predators. Obviously in zoos, you're not going to get that. So they'll be back. Just set up some food, on the roof of the paddock and they'll be back, no doubt.
Well, going to this, I mean, Japanese zoos have had a problem in the past because, obviously typhoons and things. Last year in 2019, a typhoon actually caused an entire closure to collapse, which put 100 monkeys out in the wild. They escaped that time. Japanese zoos and places often get criticized because their policy on animal rights isn't quite as good as outside of Japan, certainly in the West. So, yeah, a little bit shady, a little bit dodgy.
If you walk past any pet shop, you get your answer as to... they may think they're kawaii, but they are rather badly treated, or certainly they don't necessarily give them as much space as they should. Mind you, the humans don't have a lot of space in downtown cities anyway. So,
very true, very true. But completely unrelated to that, in recent times, we've been talking about Mount Fuji a lot. Obviously, Mount Fuji's closed this year because of the virus. They don't want people climbing Mount Fuji in summer during the climbing hiking period because it does get quite crowded on the summit of Mount Fuji. And we talked about that a few weeks ago, how it's unfortunately shut because I was going to climb it. Even though you are a skeptic, Pete, I was going to climb it. Don't care what you're saying.
Don't buy it.
Unfortunately, back in October last year, we also mentioned a chap called Tetsu Shiohara, who was streaming his ascent of Mount Fuji outside the climbing season, which finishes in September, early September. By October, it's already too cold, too snowy, too dangerous to climb the mountain. But he climbed it, and he had a live stream on Nikko, which is a Japanese video streaming website that is quite popular these days. And in the video, you can see him saying, oh, this is dangerous. This is scary. I'm ill-equipped. I don't know why I've come up here. This is ridiculous. Oh, I'm slipping and I've gone. And that's it. And he disappears. And he fell off the mountain, rolled down it, and his body was found a few days later, tragically losing his life on a live stream in front of loads of viewers. And it's quite unpleasant.
Oh,
I watched it myself. I didn't realize how much the video showed of the incident. So I've seen that, and it wasn't that much fun viewing that. But this week, he received an award that I'm sure he probably wouldn't want to receive, which was he received the first Japanese person to win a Darwin Award. Now, what is a Darwin Award, Pete, for people that don't know what it is? I haven't heard of Darwin Awards in a long time, but what is it for those who don't know?
I mean, like, it's been in place for like a good 20 years. I mean, the early days of the internet, I seem to recall it being quite a big thing. Just, you know, just crazy stories from around the world where people, usually men from Florida, because they have different crime reporting statistics than we have, or crime reporting rules than we have. Just people dying in spectacular or silly ways. You know, people touching things that are highly electric or highly explosive, or eating something that's highly dangerous. Yeah, just ridiculous, you know, drinking isotopes and, you know, just people doing crazy things for the furtherment of their lives and their lives ending almost immediately. So, yeah, the whole, this guy falling off a mountain. The problem with, like, putting a guy like that in is that I presume it only happened not that long ago, and the visceral reaction to seeing a video of a man losing his life is just a bit close to the knuckle, isn't it? But, you know, he's the first Japanese entrant to the Darwin Awards, and obviously clearly the Japanese are regarded as being too sensible for that kind of caper. But no, we found the man who was willing to do it, and he's fallen down Mount Fuji.
It wasn't so much that he climbed Mount Fuji. Quite a few people do climb out of season, to be honest, but they go prepared. You know, they're proper experienced climbers. They go with all the gear. He was underdressed for the temperatures. Mm. He wasn't wearing the right gear or didn't have the right equipment.
No energy jelly.
I don't think he did have any energy jelly. I don't think he had any supplies. So the Darwin Awards are mainly to recognise individuals who meet their demise in an extraordinarily idiotic manner. And at first, you know, when I read about this, I thought, oh, that's a bit harsh. The guy, you know, tragically lost his life on the ascent. But he was very foolish in the way he did it. And just him speaking in the video, he clearly doesn't realise what kind of situation he's getting himself into. He's very naive about what's going on. And if any good thing comes out of this Darwin Award, it's that other people might not underestimate, you know, the danger of climbing Mount Fuji outside of the seasons, outside of the hiking season, because it is phenomenally dangerous. To quote the Darwin Award, in the spirit of Charles Darwin, the Darwin Awards commemorate individuals who protect our gene pool by making the ultimate sacrifice of their own lives. Darwin Award winners eliminate themselves in an extraordinarily idiotic manner, thereby improving our species' chance of long-term survival. Reading that out does seem a bit harsh, doesn't it?
Somebody's son.
I do.
God.
But it. Yeah. I mean, look. There are. He probably would have wanted to be in there if he was going to be in anywhere. He sounded like a wacky chap. I'm glad he found his place in the hallowed halls of the Darwin Awards.
Oh God. Oh man. I feel so conflicted on this. Poor old Tetsuya Shiohara. May rest in peace, bless him, and may his loss of life be a warning to other people not to take climbing Mount Fuji, not to climb it without the proper equipment outside of the climbing season.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
He just says, how many holes does a straw have? 0, 1, or 2. The internet can't figure it out, so I've done what any sane person would do. Ask the Luke and the Pete.
Join me, Pete Donaldson, and Luke Moore for an unplanned half hour every Monday and Thursday as we talk about, well, anything really, from your emails to life's great mysteries to this guy.
The noise you're going to hear sounds like a man being interrupted by a car. He isn't being interrupted by the car. He is making the car sound.
Our
on earth is he doing that? Beep, 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 beep. How does he make that noise? Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Beep, 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 beep.
The Luke and Pete Show is a Stakhanov production.
And with that, we now turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week, Mr. Donaldson, in the fax machine?
Oh, let's have a look in the fax machine. Let's have a look at the fax machine. The first email comes from, comes from Harry Knox. Hello, Harry Knox. Hi, Pete and Chris. Greetings from Scotland. My name is Harry, and I've been a huge fan of Japan and the Abroad in Japan channels now for 4 years. You briefly mentioned on a recent podcast the Osaka episode with Pete, where you went to a video games bar and thrashed Pete the Bomberman, if I remember correctly. You do remember correctly, Harry. I was tricked. I was hustled by a youngster, Chris Broad, whilst also noting in the voiceover that these bars are closing under pressure from big video game companies. Taking this into account, while also becoming desperate to go to Japan in the next few years, how many years do you think it would be before these bars go completely extinct? Thank you for reading. Massive fan. Kind regards, Harry Knox.
Well, I mean, what I'll say is, with the Bomberman bar that we featured in Osaka, a lot of people are angry because we didn't put the location of the bar in the video, but that's because the owner of the bar specifically asked us not to, so we could keep it a secret, because there is a crackdown on video game bars, just because a lot of companies, unfortunately Nintendo, great company, are pretty hardcore on not letting people have fun when it comes to potentially infringing on their property. I mean, I get the Mario Kart thing. Remember the Mario Kart where you dress up like Mario and drive around and cause mayhem.
That actually could cause death. But unless you've wired a step up converter for a US version of the snares, you're not going to kill anyone by letting someone play a bit of Mario Kart on it. But like, I always think, like, with those things, like, Nintendo have a terrible reputation for in the new world of streaming and patching and modding video games. They've got a terrible reputation for cracking down really hard on any infringement on their IPs, and they don't seem to live in the real world. It seems they don't seem to live in how fandom works nowadays. People want to kind of like take work and subvert it and change it and play with it, and people who aren't really being that aggressive or weird with their work, they're just making, you know, little changes and streaming and stuff like that. Nintendo cracked down really strongly on people who are just, you know, who love your product. So I don't know why. I mean, there was a recent case of, I think someone's managed to make they'd managed to reverse engineer Mario 64. So now we are getting actual native versions of on the PC, and presumably Mac as well, of Mario 64. So it's not an emulation. It's not even necessarily a conversion. It's a from-the-ground-up, machine code-assembled version of Mario 64 on the PC. And people are doing some fantastic stuff with it. They're putting the new Mario from the last Mario game into it. They're updating the textures to 4K. They're making it look beautiful. And if Nintendo are unwilling to create these products, you know, make new versions, because, you know, they have a system that dictates that they have to be a little slower and a bit more thoughtful about it, let people have their fun. These games aren't easy to set up when it comes down to it. So just let people have their fun. What I would say to any video game bar, just get rid of your Nintendo stuff. There's enough PC Engine and MSX and Sega content out there, cartridges. So let people play that and keep open the video game bars and just sort of go, Nintendo, look, if you want to be part of this, you can be part of this, but don't be bloody mugs about it. You're so silly. Like, it's Nintendo's so much of a big part of Japan. Why can't they just have their fun with the video games that everyone grew up playing? And that is what I have to say on it, Chris. Sorry, I've, you know, devoted that email to what I have to say about Nintendo. I just find them, baffling and really sort of jaded and old school. It probably has something to be said about Nintendo's, you know, the people who sort of run their company being a little older. But that said, they do make some incredible games.
You are a man of passion. I understand. I get it. I absolutely get it. One way around it that some bars have done is not to call themselves video games bar, just say you're a normal bar. But there might be consoles laying around as well that you can play if you come to the bar. And that's one way that quite a few bars have got around it, thankfully. So I don't think it'll be the extinction of it, but I think it'll probably be the extinction of a certain type of video game bar. But we will see. Hopefully, there's a few good ones. There's one in Shinjuku that's really amazing. I can't remember the name of it, but literally, if you just type in video game bar and Shinjuku, you'll find it. I often drop in there. And we got one from Eric and Sheridan from New York City. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. My partner and I had a trip planned to Japan from May 23rd to April 7th to Tokyo, Kyoto and Hiroshima. Obviously, things got hairy in New York and elsewhere during this time, but in the end, we threw caution to the wind and decided to go anyway, particularly because it was her first trip to Japan. Would this trip during a global crisis turn out to be another disaster? Long story short, it was great. The Hanami cherry blossom season was in full bloom. Everywhere we went, tourist spots that were usually mobbed were nearly empty, and we ate so much good food. A highlight was getting drunk with an old sushi chef in Ginza, and he told me, 'Your eyes can see the Japanese soul.'" That's quite nice, isn't it? No one's ever told me that. Have you ever heard that? Have you got that?
No, you see, your eyes are very red, so you need to leave. You've drunk too much.
I know we got very lucky, but it was an incredible experience. Now I just want to go back. One thing we didn't get to do was go to any museums because they were all shut because of the pandemic. Gentlemen, my question is, what's your favorite museum in Japan? Thanks for the channel and the podcast. Love the stuff, Eric and Sheridan. Good question. I would say mine is the Mirai Kan Science and Technology Museum in Odaiba, just outside of Tokyo on the artificial island. It's there where you can find Asimo the robot, and it's just the most incredible thing, seeing Asimo the robot. It doesn't have you seen it, Pete? It's basically, it looks like a child in a suit, the way it moves. It's so elegant. Have you
so
seen it
elegant.
Firsthand?
I've seen, there's a few eyeballs. You see them in my favorite shop, Tokyo Hands. When I was in when I was doing Halloween in Shibuya, there was a it must have been a woman, a tiny child-like character who dressed up like one of those robots, and it looked disgusting. It truly looked it was just rank, and it haunted my dreams for a very, very long time, unfortunately. I'll send you a picture, Chris, to put up. It is a foul.
Yeah, I mean, they do have some creepy creations there at the Mirai Kan involving robots, and I'm really into robots, so absolutely love it. But I find Asimo the robot really frustrating. For those of you who don't know, it's a robot developed by Honda. It's been going for like 20, 30 years now, and they keep adding to it. But it moves like a human. It can go upstairs. It can open bottles. It can move its hand around to twist things. And you sort of sit there, and the doors open, and Asimo comes running out across the room really quite fast, really impressively. And if I recall, he scored a goal. He kicked a ball. But I remember thinking, this is incredible. Japan has had this for 30 years. Why have they not done anything with Asimo? The only time it seems to be used is at the Mirai Kan for this like short 5-minute exhibition. And it just feels like a wasted opportunity. Like they could have done so much with Asimo, and it's just sat in a cupboard.
Japan's one of the few places where you'll see, I think it's like a cut down version of Asimo called Pepper. Is that right? Pepper robots, where you'll sort of go, where you'll sort of say hello. I've just sent you a picture online of Pepper, which I think is a version of Asimo that I met when I was dressed as Edward Scissorhands. Can you see him? He's disgusting. But look how small the person must have been to fit in there. I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'8".
That's horrible.
I presume it was a girl. I think she's sort of dressed in like a kind of hockey mask. She's got
a little kind of suit on. Yeah, it's all rather unpleasant. I mean, Pepper the Robot is owned by SoftBank, one of Japan's biggest.
Okay. I thought it was the same thing. Right,
and they roll out Pepper the Robot mainly at every SoftBank branch. If you go in, there's a Pepper, certain tourist spots, they always have one. The thing is, I've never, ever seen anyone interact with Pepper the Robot. It just sort of stands there on wheels, moving around backwards and forwards with its touchscreen display. It tracks you, it tracks your face, so its head moves and follows you around, which is a little bit creepy. But like, it really, nobody ever uses it apart from getting a few selfies for Instagram. No. So I think I need to go back to the drawing board with Pepper and work out how to make it useful, how to make it good, to be honest. Other than that, it's impressive. And you could buy one for, I think, $20,000 maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's bad. I guess if you're mad. Well, it's a talking point for a place, isn't it? And like it speaks in English and Japanese as well. So, yeah. Mm. Best museum? there's the question. No, I was asking you, where's the best museum?
Oh,
you were giving it the big licks about... Yeah, that one.
That one. It's called the Mirai Kan Science and Technology. Mirai means future. Kan just means museum. And that's in Tokyo. Science and Technology Museum. Definitely
Beautiful.
Go there. Absolutely love it. Got one from Joe. I'll hand that to you.
Oh, I was just finding my favourite museum. The Team Lab Lighting Museum in just over the Rainbow Bridge in Tokyo. It's very good.
Oh, actually, no, Team Lab. Team Lab is right next to the Mirai Kan. So you could do both in one day. They're about like 5 minutes apart.
Yeah. Oh, fair dues. Not too shoddy. Joe says, hi, Japan enthusiast and Chris. Sounds like I'm about to be replaced there. I've been binging the podcast this past week and I've noticed that Nagasaki never seems to come up. I also did a search on your channel as well and there doesn't seem to be a video about it. I studied there in 2016. I was hoping maybe you covered it at some point. Have you been there? And if so, what did you think? Thanks, Joe.
I have not been to Nagasaki. I've always wanted to go there Ooh. Because of history. And there's an island near it called Hirado, where the British and Dutch had their first outpost in Japan. And I'd love to go there and check it out and just wander around. You've been there, though, haven't you, Pete? You've had a
I have been there,
around.
Yeah. There's a hilarious statue. It shouldn't be hilarious, but it is hilarious because they've created this kind of statue that commemorates the dropping of the atomic bomb. And the man who made the statue, I think I mentioned it before on the podcast, he's put a sign on it saying basically that this is the best statue in the world and you should respect it. I'm paraphrasing, but it's just a really arrogant little plaque that he's put on his own statue saying, this is a really good statue. And it's this blue man pointing up the sky and I think pointing to the right, I think, as well, to sort of signify something. But you can also see like a cross-section of where the rubble sort of started and ended when the bomb was dropped. So fascinating, obviously very emotional place. And if you're going to go to Hiroshima, to the Peace Park, it's it's not that far away from, if you're going to go to Fukuoka, obviously it's just one more stop after that, isn't it? Well worth a visit. It's a bit of a, I'm calling it the sort of indie version of Hiroshima for obvious reasons because it's a bit out there, but there's museums and because nobody goes, do they? It's one of those places that nobody goes. They do Hiroshima and they think they've done it, and then they head back to Osaka or whatever. So it's definitely worth visiting, and I certainly enjoyed it more than, in a weird way, enjoyed it more than I did Hiroshima, because there's nothing really in Hiroshima apart from the Peace Park and a few museums, but Nagasaki was just a bit more to it, I think.
Yeah, I definitely gets overlooked because Hiroshima obviously was the first place where the atomic bomb was dropped, and Nagasaki seems to be an afterthought in the story as a result. But no, I'd love to go down there. I'd like to see Battleship Island, Gunkanjima, the abandoned mining town. It's just a massive island that's been abandoned with a town on it. Lots to do there. I did plan on going with Natsuki a few months ago, but obviously things happened. We got one here from Oscar. It says, dear Chris and Pete, my name is Oscar and I started watching in 2016, started listening in 2019. I went on a crazy trip of a lifetime to Japan in 2019 for the Rugby World Cup, and it was a month I'll never forget. Ever since the trip, all I can think about is going back. While I was there, I heard lots of talk about local festivals and parades. I really want to go back and experience one, but I have no clue where to start looking or finding out about them. Could you recommend a festival to go to? Many thanks, Oscar. Have you ever seen a festival in Japan, Pete? Have you been to one?
I've only seen the most I've seen is like a procession down the street, New Orleans style, with some like musicians and drum taiko. Is it, what are the drums? Taiko. Some people carrying those kind of, what are they, shrines or boxes or something? I can't remember what they're called. Like four men carrying a thing. I've met someone who was like, just a person from like America who worked in like a video game place in Kyoto, and she was chosen for she was chosen to help carry this thing. And she was really excited about it. But I've only seen one of those. I've never seen like a proper, you know, the daft ones you see on documentaries where it's the penis festival or the festival of fire and stuff like that. I've not seen any of that.
The damn penis festival. That is the one that everyone seems to know about and go to. And it looks really, really quite messed up. A lot of people have asked me to go, but I've just been like, no, the videos are there on YouTube. I don't want to go. Watch one of those videos. They get away with it by referring it to a fertility festival. But if you look at the pictures, no, it's so graphic and unpleasant. But there are lots of great festivals across Japan that don't involve massive phalluses being carried around, and there's a few good websites. Just type in Japan festival calendar and there's a few good links on Google. And I mean, this year, obviously, because of things going on, I suspect many of them sadly will be cancelled or postponed, but most of the festivals happen between July and August when Japan is at its most formidably hot. But the festival I want to go to the most is the Aomori Tachinepta festival, where they have these giant 22-meter statues that they carry around. I put it in a video once called, I can't remember what the video was called. I think it's called Japan's Most Picturesque or Japan's Most Stunning Hot Spring. And I did it a few years ago with Ryotaro, but the statues are housed in like a NASA-style building that's used to hold like rockets. It's that big because of these 20, 30-meter tall statues. And it's really quite incredible. But check out the video if you want to see what that is. There's a lot, most of the festivals between July and August. Just don't go to the fertility festival. And we've got one here from Jake. He says, Dear Chris and Pete, hope you're both well and safe. My name's Jake. I'm 19, 20 on July 3rd from Reading. Happy birthday, Jake. My question for both of you, handsome gentlemen, assumptions, is do you have any guilty pleasures relating to Japan in some way? For example, I really enjoy listening to J-pop. I even got the chance to meet Kari Pamyu Pamyu in London a couple of years ago, and other interesting J-pop idols like Ladybeard and Bandmaid. Thank you so much for answering my question. Kind regards, Jake from Reading. Do you have any guilty pleasures relating to Japan in some way? Have you met Kari Pamyu Pamyu?
No, but I'm fascinated by a Bandmaid. Is that like Band-Aid or is that Band-Aid? Like a plaster? Bandmaid.
You had to ask about the one that I didn't know. The others. Not Bandmaid.
Ladybeard's an Aussie bloke who has a beard, but he dresses up like a little kind of kawaii princess kind of character, doesn't he? But he's got a big beard.
Yeah, he's done some work with Baby Metal. He's often around on TV just because he's so quirky and odd. Seems like a nice bloke. Well, I think we've spoke on Twitter once or twice, but haven't met yet. But he seems nice. And Kari Pamyu Pamyu, obviously, queen of the world of cute. She is an interesting character. J-pop aside, my guilty pleasure is just 1980s Japan dioramas, as we went on about at the start of the video. I just love the 1980s. I love Japan's Showa era. As you know, Pete, when we went to Sapporo and I took you to the 1960s style bar Humbe, I just love that era. There's just a sense of optimism in the post-war era. Japan went through a lot of changes and things were really great and magical and wonderful before it all went down the pan in the 90s when the economic bubble burst. But from the 1950s to the 1980s, Japan just had this really great time. And there's a lot of great Showa era museums and things around Japan. And actually, my favourite museum is in Takayama, and it is a Showa-era museum. And you can find lots of memorabilia and things from the 1960s to the 1980s. What about you, though? Any other guilty pleasures, Pete?
I think you're right. I mean, there's I love sort of Japanese street photography. It's one of my favourite sort of things, and watching people sort of take these incredible photos of people. But I do think there's a certain, and you know, I've taken a fair share of pictures myself, but I think there's a real there's a level of slight racism in, you know, people just find it very easy to take pictures of Asian people as they're going about their business, and it's somehow seen as being exotic. And street photography seems to be at its most popular when, you know, you're jamming a camera in front of someone's face in bloody Chinatown, wherever you might be in the world. But that is a bit of a guilty pleasure of mine. I do find the Japan is so different in the way that, you know, salarymen go about their business and just, you know, get up at the crack of dawn. They're out until 3 a.m. And people taking pictures of that, I find very fascinating because, you know, it's just these men and women living their lives in a very different way than mine. But I think My Guilty Pleasure is definitely similar sort of era, that kind of jump off point between when neon, and you see this a lot in street photography and photography in Hong Kong, where at the moment the streets of Hong Kong are getting slightly dimmer because no one's using neon anymore, neon lights. I've got a real love for neon lights. And then they're switching over to LEDs, which are more power efficient and safer, and they don't break so easy. You can use plastic tubing instead of glass. And so that sort of like, that sort of era in the 80s where you'd have the neon lights in Tokyo and Shibuya and Shinjuku, but it would be before the use of the plasma screen or the LCD screen. So you had these kind of like incredible kind of like constructions, but they were usually painted by someone, like the backings were painted by someone physically. So yeah, old neon lights and old street photography from the 80s is just something incredibly beautiful. And anything that anything taken from that kind of era where people are using Game Boys and personal Walkmans and stuff like that, anything 80s tech is definitely is definitely something I'm very, very into, and that's certainly something I'm always coming back with on my trip to Japan. I always have a spare suitcase so I can take home a little boom box from the 80s. Profit because, you know, holiday. Japanese look after their stuff. Well, I don't sell them. They just sit in my house, clog it up.
I think that's interesting how both you and I share a love of nostalgia and just this kind of bygone era. And I think it's really sad that neon is dying out, even though I guess it's for power-saving reasons.
It's probably for the best. And I imagine the gases are quite hard to create. They're probably not. I'm sure some chemists will tell me. But I think the and also when we were in that that bar, the Hanbei bar, just looking around the walls, they just sort of pepper the walls with pictures and LP covers of like kind of pop music from the day. Just that kind of their version of like American pop stars with these ridiculous hairspray addled haircuts, these kind of beautiful kind of weird looking people who look like they've been created by CGI is something else. So if you like pick up like some old 80s records, it's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely. Can't we be. All this talk of neon and street photography and nostalgia's got me raring to go to Tokyo and get some photography. I haven't done any nighttime photography in a while, so I'm dying to do that. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. Guys, we'll be back same time next week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week. And we'll be back next Wednesday to do it all over again. Take care, guys. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
A Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.